Hello, everyone, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me is...
It's Candace LePage.
Candace came back,
everyone. Do you remember me? Anybody remember me? I think it's been like 6 weeks or something.
Oh, yeah, no, it's... well, Tim hasn't been on yet since we came back after break, so he...
All right.
He wins.
He wins loses, for the longest hiatus. Or whatever.
Yeah. Everyone's a winner here on End Credits, anyway.
That was a great song by Boot Sauce. Send your hate mail to Soon48.
We'll save it for the end of the show. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We're here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the feature spinoff comedy Between Two Ferns, the movie. That will be in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the latest movie news from the past week, including Friends. The sitcom is being celebrated for its 25th birthday. But have we made too big a deal about the legacy of Rachel Ross, Monica Chandler, Joey, and Phoebe? Yes, I remembered all their names without having to look them up. Then it's the ultimate crossover. Kevin Feige, the head of Marvel, is making a Star Wars movie, so what does that mean? And why did George Lucas feel betrayed by the head of Disney? And finally... Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum are all coming back for Dino Fun in Jurassic World 3, but can they save the franchise? Big if. Anyway.
I was going to drop a spoiler alert there on my opinion, but...
Too late.
Yeah, we'll hold it.
Speaking of spoilers, people are maybe concerned that the release of Joker this Friday is going to get some people riled up, perhaps commit to... doing some real-life violence. It's kind of bizarre. I mean, it's not... It's bizarre, but it's not bizarre. Because I think this was sort of codified with the families of the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting mm-hmm. victims coming out and saying, Warner Brothers, remember the last time a Batman movie came out?
Yeah. I was never terribly interested in this movie to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, trailers started coming out, and I was going, oh, this might actually be really interesting. Maybe this will be a real stark sort of portrayal of what toxic masculinity has become.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I felt that for, I don't know, maybe a day. And then I started hearing... you know, the reactions of the filmmakers and the actors in it who are just like, what do you mean this is how people might take this? Are you I've never even considered that. And I'm like, Oh, so it's not going to be a take on that because you guys just didn't even understand what toxic masculinity... Well, whatever. I'm not going to... I don't know the people involved. I don't know if they're terrible human beings. But clearly, they were not trying to say anything about terrible human beings, and it's just like, okay, well, whatever chance I had of going to see it is now totally gone because clearly you have no idea.
Like, I question whether or not they on the one hand, I think you might be right that they may have made this and not recognized maybe the greater social implications, but on the other hand, I think the minute they say, like, yes, this is about toxic masculinity is the minute that the internet pile on all the people who, you know, tank Captain Marvel, all the people who tank the Paul Feige Ghostbusters.
They shouldn't have made it to begin with. Like, they're either making a statement or they're not.
Right.
And so they're either lying or they are a bunch of toxic males. Like, to me, these are the only two options.
Right, and that could very well be it, because Joaquin Phoenix, like, left an interview,
with
The Telegraph, it's not like movieclickbait.com or some, like, kind of crazy website like that, which is trying to get, like, provocative quotes to get clicks. It's a legitimate, you know, UK newspaper. But, I wouldn't consider Joaquin Phoenix a coward, because this is a guy who lived, like, the life of, like, I'm giving up acting and becoming a raptor for a year. Did I say rapper or raptor?
You said raptor, but if either he could give legitimate up acting to practice becoming a raptor, I would believe that of
both fair.
Joaquin Phoenix.
But he said he was giving up acting to be a rapper. He did, like, a Letterman appearance, and like, he lived this life for a year for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would not have characterized him a coward. But, I mean, when you get up and leave, when someone asks a legitimate question of the movie you're in, How else can you read that but cowardly?
Well, and not only that, it's a little like, you know, I know the family he came from.
Mm.
I don't think that that is a group of people who are not constantly investigating social codes and social mores and understanding what is going on. So again, I come down to either he's lying or he has, and I mean, he does have a fair amount of significant personal issues and some traumas to deal with. And then I'm left with, oh, he has not dealt with them well at all. Mm. Like, I can't see him actually not having recognized this. Same thing with the filmmaker, Todd
Phillips.
Yeah. Like, do you even understand the industry you're working in right now? Like, look around at the other people. And I mean, the thing is that this is sort of a take on The King of Comedy and or Taxi Driver or both together. And both of those films were sharp social commentaries on, you know, very few people look at the Robert De Niro characters in either of those and think of them as the hero or even particularly an anti-hero.
Yeah.
It is, oh, this is a person who has not dealt with things, and this is the horror of what that can come to.
It's not so much true for The King of Comedy, but for Taxi Driver, that character has also sort of become a caricature. Like, the whole "are you talking to me" bit has been parodied, you know, a million times. That it's almost like a comic book character in that regard, that you don't even need to know the movie or know the scene to get the reference. Are you talking to me? Looking in a mirror and saying, are you talking to me? And I think that's, kind of dangerous too, is because the whatever messages Scorsese was working with are kind of gotten lost. And just the, I mean, it was on Animaniacs for crying out loud, the whole Taxi Driver
and
jokes.
It is true that the films did actually, you know, did create some real life violence as well. Mm-hmm. And all films will, because
Hinkley,
there are always people who are a little, who see things differently.
Sure.
Trying to use language that is not going to make people with mental illness sound terrible.
Right.
But there are always people who are going to see things differently and who are going to have difficulty with reality versus movies. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't make films that talk about these things. But apparently, this isn't a film that talks about these things, because they're saying they had no idea that people would think that's what they were doing. So now I'm just left with, right, so I will never see this. Clearly, it's totally off my...
There's mixed messages, too, because the way the trailers have been cut, I would read those as, like, somebody was making a message. This is what this movie is about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and Todd Phillips has also been kind of defensive about, about, you know, he did an interview where he said, like, well, what about John Wick? Nobody's worried about someone going to see John Wick and then
Do
doing
we need
violence.
To talk about the character of John Wick and what his motivations
right.
are?
Right. But, I mean, aside from motivations, too, John Wick is a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, the action is very well done, very stylized. And I think Vince and I had this debate about John Wick Chapter 3 when it came out. But, you know, it's a cartoon. Like, that whole knife fight scene.
Yes. Yeah, the third one was really a comedy. Like, more than
right.
anything else.
It's like, it's Chaplin-esque, because you don't even need dialogue or sound. It's because the action is so fluid like that. This is very stylized. This is, like, very... sort of, it looks like it's based in, like, New York in the 80s style, where, you know, Times Square was a dump and, you know, there was legitimate concerns about violent crime on the street. You know, violent crime was, like, had, I think since the late 60s had gone up every year until the 90s it started coming down. It's making some very pointed comments. So, like, to compare... you know, John Wick to Joker is like to compare something like the TV version of Hannibal, which was also kind of very cartoonish and very not in the sense that it wasn't itself serious, but, you know, like the murders in that show were kind of over the top and involved like elaborate staging and things, as opposed to something like, say, the original Silence of the Lambs, which you know was inspired by very real killers like Ed Gein and Ted Bundy. Mm-hmm. So it's apples and oranges.
Yeah,
is the point I'm getting at. So you're out.
I'm out. I mean, I was out to begin with, and then the trailers got me, and now I'm back out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm interested because I want to be part of that debate, and I mean we're gonna see it for next week's show anyway. But I feel like I think you kind of have to see it to get to the bottom of like, were you making a message movie or were you not? And it also comes down to like, I remember last year when Deadpool came out, the Deadpool sequel came out, and there's a not to spoil Deadpool 2, but there's a very blatant act of fridging at the beginning of the movie, and the fridging was a term that Gail Simone, a comic writer, came up with about the girlfriend of a hero character being killed to motivate that character. Yep. And the two writers, whose names escape me at the moment, they came out and said, look, we didn't know about this term fridging. It's like, come on, you wrote two movies that are loaded with comic book phrases and terms and characters. Like, you did your homework. You mean to tell me you never came across the term fridging or Gail Simone coining the term fridging? I don't believe you.
Yeah, no. Either you are stupid.
Yeah.
Or you're lying.
Right. And I think they took the lie because I don't think they're stupid.
No, yeah.
But they took the lie because having to admit that means opening themselves up to a conversation they might want to have. And I think Joaquin Phoenix and Todd Phillips don't want to have that conversation.
It's time for everybody to start having the conversations, not to get political, but clearly this is happening in Canada. We just need to talk about
it. Well, that could be said about any number of things going on in Canada right now.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Friends instead.
Speaking of, things that need to be talked about.
Right, so it was the 25th anniversary of the premiere of Friends, which was September 1994. Not a lot was talked about the premiere of ER, I will add, which was also the same anyway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, nobody cares.
They should, though. ER really, started a whole trend of terrible hospital dramedies.
Well, it also launched George Clooney.
No, Facts of Life launched George Clooney.
All right.
Back to Friends.
Back to Friends. I don't know. I remember watching Friends like maybe the first couple of seasons, and then I just didn't watch it anymore.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's certainly not a show that you had to watch every week. You could just catch an episode here and there. Pretty much most of the story was fine. Ross and Rachel were just constantly in the will they, won't they. And the only time that things really changed for characters was sort of in the last, three seasons when we started getting the Chandler, Monica stuff and then the weird Joey, Rachel stuff.
Yeah.
Where they just, so there's just some dynamic switch there. But really, nothing else really changed about the character. So you didn't have to watch it.
It's interesting you said that because I was reading a thing on Vox where the TV critic was making the point that it was like one of the few sitcoms where the characters did actually change over the course. Like the relationships developed and altered, whereas like something like Cheers, Norm in season one is the exact same Norm as in season 10 or whenever it went off the air.
Yeah.
Whereas,
but is he though? See, I watched a lot of Cheers and I think that
everyone
that,
should.
Yeah, that he definitely changed. Everybody changed in that show. I mean, Woody started one place and ended somewhere else entirely. Carla went through a stream of husbands and became a more loving person. And like even though it's a sitcom and we talk about how there isn't really character change in people, there are clearly character change because there's also change in the humans who are portraying them.
Well, that's true. And you notice a change in, and maybe it's just because I'm a MASH fan too, that in MASH, over 11 years of MASH, four times longer than the war was about, by the way. Mm-hmm. Something like, I guess maybe a better idea would be Gilligan's Island where
There's
never any
no
real
change.
Progress getting off
Absolutely.
The island or, Bewitched, or I Dream of Jeannie or, going back,
it's, and I think the reason for that, too, is because those episodes did, people made an episode and then it was over and done with and they never had to come back to it. I mean, back then, the possibility that they would just not even keep a copy of the episode. It would never air again. But by the time the 80s and 90s, you know, especially the 90s, but certainly in the 80s, syndication was a thing and yeah. reruns were a thing. And so people writing sitcoms did have to make the episodes rewatchable.
Right.
And make some changes. Now, I still don't believe that those characters changed very much. They might have changed a little bit in context to their relationships with each other,
mm-hmm.
but I do not believe that they changed in any way in that they learned any human values.
Yeah,
and I'm not the person who goes around dumping on Friends, and I know that that's a big thing to dump on it. I think that it was very much of its time, and I think it's important to rewatch it to go, oh, that is not funny now, but it was funny in
right.
1995 and 96 yeah. because that's, one, how far we have come, and two, that, you know, there are reasons why things have changed now, and it's because people have spoken out about it.
Right. It's funny to watch, like, there's so much gay panic in
Ooh, big
with,
time.
Like, not just, like, the Joey and Chandler stuff.
But Chandler and his mom, essentially,
right.
who was his father and then
right.
became his mom.
Yeah.
That is not really handled well, though I
no.
will say Kathleen Turner rocked it in that role.
She's always great. No, it's, but there was the storyline about Ross's ex-wife marrying or
yeah.
getting into a relationship with another woman. And it's like this huge thing. It's like, she turned her. It's like Darth Vader trying to turn mm-hmm. you to the dark side of lesbianism or something. And it's like, that is so cringeworthy now.
Yeah.
This idea that, you know, instead of, you know, his ex-wife sort of discovering about who she is, it's like the new partner is like an arch villain.
Yeah.
And it's so.
But yet, at the time, it
right.
was seen as very
oh,
progressive
for sure.
because
yeah.
one, like this major show and, you know, one of the major characters, people in his life was gay.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways that whole relationship was treated like any other relationship.
Right.
You know, any other time that someone was divorced because their ex went off, you know, chose someone else, you're going to make that person a villain.
Sure. I mean, there's so many interesting ways to read it too. And it reminds me of just when people look back at these, you do have to think of the time. And I saw this on one of the CNN decade shows where they were mm-hmm. talking about when Will and Grace came on. And I think it was Sean Hayes who said, you know, they would get notes from NBC executives that would be like, when can Will and Grace just like finally get together?
Oh my
and it's
God,
like,
you do not understand the show,
you
do
don't
you?
Understand the point of the show, but because it was, you know, it made money and it was popular,
yeah.
you know, it was, you know, it was sort of easier to swat that away. And it you know, we do kind of read into things levels where now that we didn't before. And maybe that's an interesting way to treat this. You know, because people are constantly revisiting Friends thanks to Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's been way over the top.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, though, there is a lot to say that every single one of those actors is really, really good. Like,
mm-hmm.
it was just a really solidly made and performed television show, and
it's,
that
yeah.
means a lot.
And it's a great ensemble, and it's mm-hmm. the ensemble that makes it work. And if you don't doubt that, have you ever heard of
Watch
Joey?
The Joey show. Yeah.
Because as soon as, like, Matt LeBlanc in that ensemble is great, but as soon as you pluck him out, and I think it probably would have been true of any one of those mm-hmm. characters.
Except maybe Chandler Bing. That's just a personal thing.
I mean, I think, like, Courtney Cox has shown that she can, like, lead a comedy on her own, and I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, take one or two of them. Matthew Perry might be another one, but it's the ensemble itself.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Since we're talking about Friends, I think it's only fair to remember the contribution of the Rembrandts, because it is their only contribution to the musical catalog. We're going to take a break and then come back with more end credits. You're listening to CFRU.
I'll be there for you when the rain starts to fall.
we'll be there for you too, you know, because this is end credits. I don't know.
We're only getting two verses of the song. Did you know this song is like a full, like, radio length play?
I remember when it came out as a single, it was, you know, kind of a, I mean, that used to be a thing too. Like the Hawaii 5-0 was like a single. It was like a top 100. It was like on the Billboard top 100.
It was a good song. The Hawaii 5-0 theme.
By The Ventures. It's a good ditty. not exactly.
I mean, there's nothing more to say, so let's just move on.
Let's move on to another thing with good music. So Star Wars isn't back in the news. I mean, there's a new Star Wars movie coming out this year, but I mean, it's interesting what's going to happen after the release of The Rise of Skywalker later this year. Originally, the plan was to release one Star Wars movie a year. That seems to have been too much to expect. maybe too much Star Wars for the world. But one of the people now working on a future Star Wars movie is Kevin Feige, the man behind Marvel Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Excited?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
I can tell.
Here I am, excited.
It's, I mean, it is interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
He's the man who built Marvel Studios from whole cloth.
Yes, who created this grand, terrible master plan for 22 films. Or what is it, 20-some that culminate in one giant 7-hour-long fest of CGI. I recently did finish watching.
I did watch
Endgame recently. It took me, I watched it at home and took some breaks and... It's like, oh my God, I'm not even halfway through yet. Oh, what's going on here? Okay.
I think I liked Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
I think it redeemed Infinity War. Not by much, but...
Well, yeah. I mean, Infinity War was not great. We're talking Star Wars.
Star Wars. I mean, but he's a man who saw the impossible. And I think no matter how you feel about the Marvel Cinematic Universe as it played out... He did it.
Mm-hmm.
He freaking did it. And, you know, I'm wondering, like, what does... I mean, aside from being a fan, because I think a lot of people are lured to the bright lights of Star Wars because they come from a thing of being fans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what are you planning on doing with it? The hope is that you're planning on doing something new and different in spite of the fact that the one time recently someone tried to do something new and different... He got Castor Oil poured down.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the best Star Wars thing that's come out in ages. I really, really enjoyed Rian Johnson's Star Wars film.
It keeps getting better. Yeah. I rewatched it a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. It keeps getting better.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not against playing in the Star Wars universe. I was a person who read all the extended universe stuff, who played the video games, who, you know, went into the role-playing game. It is a great universe in which seemingly infinite stories can be told, and yet we keep telling the same stories over and over again, whether it's literally the same story in the, we're doing the, you know, Joseph Campbell myth story, or it's the same story in that, oh... It's all the same family. Sure, there's like millions of planets and lots of other people, but everything happens just to these people. That's it. So it's just like, come on. Like George Lucas is not a great director and he's not necessarily a great screenwriter, but he is a great world builder.
And he really panicked in that Legends of Tomorrow episode. I've been binge watching Legends of Tomorrow.
So he's very good at a specific thing, like better than most people.
Absolutely.
And we're not actually using the thing that he's so good at and the thing that he created for us. We just keep sending people to go back to, well, just retell this, just, you know.
Yeah, it's like the same, you know, 60-year stretch of history in the Star Wars universe, and that seems like older. Like, that's the thing about The Mandalorian that's coming up, the Disney Plus show. It's like, well, why do I want to watch a show about somebody in a Boba Fett outfit after Return of the Jedi? Who cares? That's we've covered that ground. And then there's the Obi-Wan show they're working on, and it's like, yeah, Ewan McGregor was good in that character, but, you know, what did Obi-Wan's life look like living in the desert for 20 years? Who cares? I mean, you know, there was, you know, to go back to, as you were saying, the expanded universe, like going way back in time to like the Knights of the Old Republic. And, yeah. You know, when there was like legions of Sith and there's so much, you know, you can cover, you know, also you don't necessarily have to abide by the rules of the universe as it is now. Like, you envision, like, what would a futuristic version of Star Wars look like? Or what would, like, an ancient version of Star Wars look like, where maybe they have, like, even clunkier ships and, you know, things like the rotating sections to create gravity, and, like, ships are, like, in the Arthur C. Clarke's 2010 or things like that. And it's like, there's so much you can do. And I'm not sure if it's a Disney mandate or if it's a mandate just people who grew up watching Star Wars and want to use stormtroopers. But it's just this one small period that seems to appeal to people.
He says, ironically, in his stormtrooper T-shirt.
Oh, shh.
So I do actually think...
I didn't even realize. Yeah,
I do think it has more to do with the audience, I think. And mm-hmm. I know the audience always says that they want something different, but they mm-hmm. actually don't. And we can look at the fact that Disney World has created this Star Wars world.
Galaxy's Edge, yeah.
Yeah, and created an entirely new planet and entirely new stuff. And people were like, why didn't you just set it on Tatooine? Like, why create this whole new thing? Like, right. Everything, you could have just set it in the place we already know. And... you know, in some ways, I sort of agree with them, and that maybe they should have, because that's a different thing they're trying to sell to people. But it's just once again showing that it is actually the audience who do want the same stories retold. And for whatever reason, people won't just turn on the same story. They seem to feel like, I just, it's mind-boggling to me. You know, we're getting off topic, but it comes back to this whole Princess Bride thing and how people are like, oh, maybe we should remake the Princess Bride. And everyone kind of thought it was a terrible idea. Because to me, I'm just like, what's wrong with just watching that movie again? You know, I go to see these re-released old films at theater. I think they could do more of that. They could have it not just be a Saturday at 10 a.m. sort of thing.
Yeah.
They could actually do like a 2-week, like, oh, for 2 weeks, we're going to have one screen playing the original Princess Bride or playing the original Star Wars. I mean, remember how many people went to go see it in 1997 when it was re-released?
Yeah, special edition, yeah. Oh, that was, I mean, it was a new event, and that was in January, too. Of course, you know who's making it harder for rep theaters to get old 20th Century Fox films now?
People who are showing their old films in their first-run theaters, yeah.
Right. Well, it's tough. But the other interesting thing about Star Wars going on is this Bob Iger book, which is the gift that keeps on giving, about how he bought the outlines for the sequel trilogy from George Lucas, who was then felt betrayed because they didn't use the outlines for the actual sequel trilogy, and then felt further disappointed when, you know, the Force Awakens recycled a lot of what he had already done. I felt surprised because George Lucas, I seem to remember after the prequel said, oh no, there's no sequel trilogy, get out of here.
Yeah,
it's like his story's always changed on that.
Yeah, I tend to side on on the side of Lucas on this one because despite the execution of the like prequel trilogy, the actual story told there is quite interesting and very tied to the characters that were in the original trilogy. And I think that if he did have ideas for what to do in the future, they would have, you know, quite nicely fit into the storyline. And I think we wouldn't be in this place now where we do kind of feel like, oh, well, this is just like the same old characters because it is just the same old characters doing the same old things, whereas Lucas might have actually had an actual idea. So let's sunset the characters. He had you know, ideas of what to do, whereas now it's just like, oh, we just trot them out because that's what people want. But in reality, we're introducing this whole new group of people.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think... in the prequel trilogy, there's this idea that if George Lucas had a greater sense of, like, narrative, or maybe not necessarily, but, like, if
actual plot structure?
Plot, yeah, like, plot structure and character development. Yeah. You know, if he was as concerned about, like, getting at, like, the character motivations and things as he was about, like, let's push the limits of digital tech, I think that it could have been really compelling. It's not, having said I do think you're right, though, that he probably had some interesting ideas I probably could have bounced from. But again, I think the point of Force Awakens was it was like a proof of concept. We can do Star Wars movies now and make them super successful without George Lucas's input.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, no matter how much input Lucas might have had today, he's still like in his 70s, and Disney will still be cranking out Star Wars movies 50 years from now. Mm-hmm. So it's bigger than Lucas, I'm afraid.
Are we going enough. To with a Frankenstein monster story again?
Yeah, he's created a monster.
He has created
Everybody's
a monster.
Created a monster.
And it's larger than he is now.
Speaking of recycling old characters, though, Jurassic World 3, which I actually hadn't heard a lot about till this week. It seemed like people had given up, but I guess not. They are bringing back Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum for part 3. They were the three stars of the very first Jurassic Park. Haven't been back together again since that movie. And although they have been back in various iterations, Sam Neill and Laura Dern are in Jurassic Park 3. Jeff Goldblum was in the last Jurassic World movie. I hope he got paid very well for sitting at a desk for a day.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to be terrible. I'm sure they're going to find ways to put these characters into danger with the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. And it will be completely unrealistic to, it's like, no, these people have already been through this. One of them, you know, testified to Congress about, like, let them all die.
Yeah.
And then now we're going to bring them all back and unrealistically change the character or make them stupid and put them into some place where they end up there again.
Or make them evil like B.D. Wong.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, B.D. Wong is evil.
That too, yeah. Yeah.
It just cries of desperation because Fallen Kingdom was not a good movie. It was not well received. And I think there was like a lot of goodwill coming off Jurassic World, even though I did not like Jurassic World either. I did not like how there's this poor woman in it who like gets torn apart by three different dinosaurs for basically no reason. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the characters aren't great. There's so much possibility here. And I was willing to give like Fallen Kingdom a try, like giving it the benefit of the doubt, because it seemed like they were going to do weird new things with the whole idea of the island exploding and the dinosaurs like dying out, and like how do you like what is the
yeah it could actually be an interesting story,
right?
Like, we created this thing
and
now we're just going to let it die.
Right, like it's like nature wants to destroy the island on which we've created all these things that should have been dead in the first place. But no, it just becomes this, like, what I compared it to, and I reviewed it by myself last year, was it's a slasher movie now. It's a slasher movie with dinosaurs.
Yeah.
It's about which dinosaurs will kill which human in an interesting way.
Yeah.
And if that's what we're going to come back to with just having, you know, Alan Grant and company around, then that's okay. No thanks. But if you actually have, like, good plans for, like, maybe how to tie it all together, like, sure, let's go for it. But, you know, I've seen every Transformers movie, and at the end of every Transformers movie, there's this promise that, like, no, this time we have it figured out. This is where we're going to go in the next episode. Mm-hmm. And it falls apart within 10 minutes in the next one.
Yeah. But luckily, I just go see the Transformers movies for the sound. And I think, luckily, most people just go see the Jurassic World movies for the Chris Pratt.
Is that a dinosaur? No, I'm kidding. No, he
and blue, apparently.
Right. But, I mean, that plays into the whole idea that, it, you know, don't try and... And this was in one of these pieces that I was reading that, you know, think about Gremlins, how Gremlins 2 goes into, like, full-blown, like, satire in part 2. It's like, well, don't think about trying to copy what Jurassic Park 1 was like. Do you have the right to bring species back from the dead? What's the consequence of that? What's the consequence of men interfering with nature? Just make it a freaking slasher movie. Mm-hmm. Just make it about Chris Pratt and his pet raptor fighting other dinosaurs. And, you know, don't try and, you know, proselytize anything. It's, you know, if that's the reason why we're going.
How do you get Ian Malcolm in there, though, if there's no proselytizing? I mean, that's really what his character is for, right? All he does is drop these giant, like, proclamations.
Look, Jeff Goldblum will be fine.
Oh, yeah,
he doesn't
yeah.
need the paycheck.
I mean, it's a cliche, but I will watch Jeff Goldblum read the phone book.
He'll do it one day, I guarantee. All right, we're going to leave that there and then come back and talk about Between Two Ferns, talk about reading the phone book. Anyway, you're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Going.
We're going home.
But you have to film at all times. If I say cut, that means keep the camera rolling. If I say get that camera out of my face, put that camera in my face. Okay? Let's do it again from the top.
You want to do this conversation again from the top?
Yeah, this is my life story. You ruined that scene of my life story. So did you, by the way. Let's take it from the top. Where are you going?
I'm going home.
That's bad acting.
All right, that's a scene from Between Two Ferns, the movie. It is a new film from Scott Aukerman, and it stars Zach Galifianakis, Lauren Lepkus, Ryan Gall, Giovanni Lenavo, Edie Patterson, Will Ferrell as himself, and a host of special celebrity guests. So, I mean, for those who aren't familiar, Between Two Ferns is a web series of interviews where Zach Galifianakis, again, quote-unquote Zach Galifianakis, interviews various celebrities, the joke being he's a terrible interviewer and seems only vaguely interested in talking to people.
Yeah, he's rude.
He's got no filter. He asks inappropriate questions. I'm not sure what the impetus was for doing like a full length sort of like.
Yeah, I don't know. It did sort of, it felt like it kind of came out of nowhere. I was like, oh, Between Two Ferns, is that still a thing? Like,
yeah.
Because that was on for, I don't know, what, 2007 to.
Well, I think it's how Zach Galifianakis became
Zach Galifianakis,
a name, right?
Yeah.
I think it hit its nadir when we were talking about this during the break, when Barack Obama went on there to basically promote Obamacare, which was like, I think, 2011 2012. A lot of people credit that for getting people signed up, that, you know, he appeared on this silly fun here die thing with Kurt Abrasive Zach Galifianakis.
So anybody who hasn't seen Between Two Ferns in the past could probably, it's not unlike the Colbert Report in that Zach Galifianakis is playing a character of himself, where he is a abrasive interviewer. But it is 100%, except for Barack Obama, it's really all just movie and television actor related and not political in any way. And typically he asks the questions that are the like gossip column stuff about people.
Like he just Googled that morning the name of the person, and whatever was kind of like in the gossip column he turns into questions. I find it interesting because I know that the the actors are in on a gag, and if you don't believe that, there's actually a gag reel at the end. But it's sort of an interesting dissection of like the celebrity culture and the whole thing about the talk show appearances and everything being perfectly staged. You don't get a lot of, you know, I remember Letterman back, even at the beginning of The Late Show, when, you know, Madonna would come on and, mm-hmm. you know, flash him and or use the F-bomb, or, you know, there were things that, unexpected things.
Yeah.
Things that would, you know, you would watch Letterman every night because you didn't know what might happen. You certainly didn't want to be the person who didn't see what happened. And that's changed, I guess, changed also because of YouTube. And mm-hmm. you can always go back and watch the clip on YouTube later. But also because I think these things have been so sanitized that the talk show appearances, even the more zanier ones, are now part of the Hollywood mechanism. And mm-hmm. At least going on Between Two Ferns, you even though it is staged, it feels more real in a way that the quote-unquote real talk shows don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I do like about this movie is that they do, you know, it's not like, you know, having done Coneheads or Wayne's World, where you're just 100% sort of in the sketch.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, this is kind of a mockumentary of how, you know, the fake show Between Two Ferns is created. But we're, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're still to believe that this version of Zach Galifianakis is the guy who does the interviews. He's not putting on a character. That's just the person he is.
Yeah.
But
that he's a cable access host in North Carolina.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Huge market in North Carolina, I assume.
Must be.
Yeah.
That was some station.
Yeah. Yeah. it is great. I mean, I really sort of enjoyed it. Like, I think they, you know, they didn't stray very far from what they were setting out to do. Mm-hmm. I actually found, I was surprised when we got to the end, and I thought, I think you could have put like 10 more minutes in there. I think they could have found 10 minutes. I don't know if it's more of the interviews or a little bit more story. I don't know, but it did feel short and not in a like, oh, that was a perfect length. It was like, oh.
I don't know. I thought it was a perfect length. Mm-hmm. I think I've been reading some comments online, which I probably shouldn't do, but I do anyway. But like a lot of people were like, the interview should have been longer. And I was like, I'm not coming from a fan of the original, but I think those are like the perfect length because like otherwise it just becomes the gag that doesn't end. He doesn't really understand who the celebrities are and he's inappropriate and they have to sit there uncomfortably and take it. I feel like those were sort of like, fine, that's a perfect length. But I remember there's a scene in it where he's crestfallen that the mission has failed. They're on a mission to get 10 interviews in 2 weeks. Will Ferrell, who seems to have a lot of power in Hollywood somehow.
Will Ferrell as Will Ferrell is pretty good.
Will Ferrell will give him a talk show deal for a big, like, proper talk show in L.A. And Zach feels crestfallen. He walks into a bar and he's on the TV. There's a game show, and the game show is literally called "Don't Give Up."
Yeah, it was.
I was like, "This is really on the nose," but I appreciate how
the brevity of how he turns around.
I appreciated the brevity. I appreciated it goes into the whole nature of the Between Two Ferns concept too. But it's like, there's this scene in every movie where you walk into a bar and, you know, maybe Sam Elliott's there in a cowboy hat. Or maybe there's something on the TV that, you know, makes you realize your mission is just and correct and this is a temporary setback. But in this movie, it's just blatant. It's like it's the host interviewing this woman. She's like, you know, I feel like a failure in life and I want to win so I can give my friends a vacation because they really deserve it because they've been helping me and I've been helping them. And then on top of it all, the game show is called Don't Give Up.
Yeah.
And it's very direct, which I mean, it goes with the character too, but I appreciate that.
It's likely he wouldn't have understood it if it was any less clear.
Right.
That's a good point.
It's good. Yeah. I don't know if the characters, the producer and the cameraman, who were all great. I think they're probably like people who I recognized the woman who plays Carol, who's his producer. What's her name? It's Lauren Lapkus. I think I recognize her from other things. So it's, you know, people who are established in the comedy world. So nobody's like, the celebrities are all reserved for like cameos, and there are a lot of them. I don't know if they're part of the original Between Two Ferns shows, but they were good.
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I did find the character of the cable access show, so the president.
Yeah.
She was so over the top with her character, and there was exactly enough of her. I think like even a second more would have been like, oh, okay, we get, just let's move on.
Yeah.
But it was actually just like the perfect amount of her, because she was really like... way out there.
Well, I think that's an asset to this movie, is that like Scott Aukerman seems to like understand less is more.
Yeah.
We don't need to, you know, do a, you know, a lot with John Hamm, who I love the part where they actually, as I said, interview John Hamm, and he's like, absolutely, I'm up for anything. It's like, yeah, you are up for anything, John Hamm. I've seen the Skip the Dishes ads.
Yeah.
So you get just these perfect amount of things. And I found that too with the, there's a scene where he meets Christy
Teigen.
Christy Teigen, thank you, in a bar. Yeah. And as I'm blind, they had a liaison.
Yeah.
And of course, she's married to John Legend. And who pops up in the next scene is John Legend. And there's like this, there's this tension in this scene. And it goes on just long enough before John Legend basically maces Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's perfectly executed. And I think Scott Aukerman knew what he was doing the whole time. I'm convinced that he was just keep it tight, keep it moving.
Yeah.
And because I think sometimes the longer you make the joke, the more you invite people to punch holes in it.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. Can we talk about Paul Rudd as the perfect human? He's just like, he's got, you know, the short bit, and I was just like, what? This is just great. This is just great. His and then his cut bit from the end
right.
as well. I think maybe that could definitely have been longer, was how much of the cut stuff from the interviews. And mm-hmm. it is, you know, it is really endearing, that part, to watch both the actors, Zach Galifianakis and whoever it is he's interviewing in that scene. You know, and clearly they're doing a little improv at the same time. And just to see them completely losing it at these jokes is pretty great.
Right. And some of the people are better than others. Like Paul Rudd comes from that background.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's been doing comedy forever. He's 69 years old, but he still looks 27.
Tell me about it. Good genes in that one.
Yeah. But I mean, Zach Galifianakis has a similar background, and it's a bit more strained when you get somebody like Benedict Cumberbatch, who's classically trained theater actor. And
yeah.
Maybe
no, I
not.
Think he did pretty well.
He did all right. I mean, everybody did all right.
Was it Peter Dinklage who's just like, how does anybody do this? Or maybe it was Benedict Cumberbatch who was just like, how does anybody do this? I can't keep a straight face.
Right. Peter Dinklage was good. I liked going to Peter Dinklage's house.
Yes, and I also liked, because there are, in almost every case, the actors who are being interviewed and who are playing themselves are just strictly in that sort of interview part, and we don't get to see a lot of them like outside of that. So there's a couple, you know, Matt McConaughey, John Legend, as you say, and Peter Dinklage being sort of the few that we actually see interact with the characters outside of their scenes on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Dinklage, I'm like, who came up with this whole concept? Where he's just this like loaded.
Yeah.
Just ridiculously wealthy.
Yeah.
And is just showing it all off. And then it's just like, whatever. I got more money.
Yeah. It's
like, who came up with this character?
I loved every detail of Peter Dinklage's house, from having like the copy of The Winds of Winter on display to having the Andy Warhol of LaCroix cans.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, did they have LaCroix?
No.
And to the Fabergé egg carton.
Yeah.
It was good. And I do want to highlight Matthew McConaughey, because he's in the first scene.
Yeah.
And I think maybe we get the most with him, but there are just like so many dunks on him in like a minute. Like there's one where he says like, "You're wearing a shirt. Are you feeling okay?"
Yes. Yes, that's good. And I think, is it in the cut scene, the like question about the weed budget?
Right. On True Detective. Yeah. Yeah. Forget about weed budget on True Detective. I want to see the weed budget on The Beach Bum.
Yeah.
I assume there were some serious days on the set of True Detective. Keanu Reeves too. And like some of this is like really dangerous because Keanu Reeves is having a moment right now.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's not like even somebody like Matthew McConaughey has his detractors. I'm not sure Keanu Reeves has any detractors. Mm-hmm. So playing with fire.
Yeah.
Playing with fire, having Keanu Reeves on.
He was perfect, though. He was good. Perfect in that scene. And I that one maybe should have been just a little bit longer. I don't know.
I do like Keanu, the title card. Bill or Ted.
I don't know.
John Legend, Michael Bublé impersonator.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, some of it. Oh, Matthew McConaughey, Dazed and Confused, also an actor.
Yes. Yeah. 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 But the scenes from the show are pretty good.
The scenes from the show are good. And I appreciate how we get to the end where he sees, you know, he's doing his talk show and it seems like
everything's coming up, Zach.
Right. Zachy G. And they're sort of like reveling in the fakeness and the, you know, the artificialness of it. And mm-hmm. I felt like maybe someone was taking some shots at Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah. Or really any of those sort of late night shows, because it is true. Like once you get into the primetime late night, your mm-hmm. job is not the same. You aren't mm-hmm. actually interviewing the people. You're not a journalist. Your job is really to help them show off.
Right.
Like there's nothing wrong with that. Like that's fine. But
right. Although, like, you know, Stephen Colbert certainly flirts with journalism when he has people on, you know, like Joe Biden or mm-hmm. things like that. It's, there's something, they're trying to say something. This wasn't just like something like this fun little thing, although it's certainly a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Big budget in places, too, especially some of the flooding scenes. I was surprised.
Yeah.
It's like they put a lot of thought and effort into this. And
it, Funny or Die has like 586 million clicks, so they must have millions of dollars.
I do love the click. Well, I mean, Will Ferrell's so powerful.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed. But it was an enjoyable little romp. Mm-hmm. And I think even if you're not a fan of Between Two Ferns, I think there's a lot to recommend it. And it's on Netflix. So.
Yeah, and you're never going to regret 82 minutes.
No, like that's exactly right.
It's a pretty short film, yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, there's a lot of humor, a lot of wonderful discomfort in places. It was a joy, and it's, mm-hmm. it's a reminder too that Zach Galifianakis
is really good at
it's
what
really
he does.
Fun. Yeah, it's really like, I mean, the whole thing with the Hangover movies, like that character went from sort of being like amusingly dim to like being a full-on sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people are familiar with Zach Galifianakis for those movies, but you know, those are kind of like the biggest things he's done. This is a reminder that there's a real comedic talent behind Zach Galifianakis and
dramatic talent too, really. Not that there was a lot of drama in this film, but
no.
You know, also playing the sort of straight man and you know, he does have moments where he's like, oh hey.
Yes, he's the straight man
be?
In this. Yeah, he's I love Zach Galifianakis. Come back, Zach Galifianakis. Anyway, that's it for the show, and we hope you liked it. If you want to listen to it again, you can find us on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can download the show every Friday from the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can find us on your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Find us on social media on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And Candace, where can people find more of your work?
Yes, well, look for me anywhere on the internet at CINN48. And this week in particular, I am doing a guest spot on a show hosted by Oliver Rockside, ex-CFRU alum, called You're Just the Worst, where he talks about the top 100 worst songs of all time, and I disagree with him and tell him that those songs are not the worst. So
that's That sounds like a Between Two Ferns waiting to happen. Very good. And I will be back here tomorrow on CFRU at 5 p.m. for news and politics and open source Guelph with Scotty Hertz. We're going to have more election candidates, so tune in for that. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca. And of course, stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU. 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits. And see you then.